Good afternoon, everybody. Here we are again, and we're beginning externalization of the hierarchy program number 28. These programs have been of varying lengths, anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half to maybe 2 hours, sometimes to 5 hours, or four, or three, depending on how much time is available. We've been talking here about a power that has to be evoked. The power here to be evoked is out of the human soul. In this hour of need, the power to be evoked out of the human soul in this hour of need is the ability to know the plan and to work for its furtherance, thus cooperating with those forces which are endeavoring to reestablish order on Earth, which will be, of course, easier and easier to accomplish as the seventh ray comes in, but at that time it was being overwhelmed by the forces of chaos, and to end the cycle of aggressive wickedness. It's a Martian cycle, and I think I'm recalling that it reached its high point in 1946. At least in relation to Scorpio. So somehow we are at that point. A few years before, this is a this is an article from 1940, I think, toward the end of 1940. End this cycle of aggressive wickedness in which we find ourselves today. Find ourselves. Well, that was, of course, 80 years ago, but. The emergence has not yet occurred. There's a possibility, you know, I put this down here, that if you run into a few moments where I seem to be talking and no sound is coming out, just hang in there. In a minute or two, the sound will reappear. And if I've skipped any important material, I do redo it. So my apologies, but it seems faster than trying to get it edited when I myself am not the editor, and there's a lot of exchange going on. So, you know, it's one of those Aries things. Being the sun in Aries as I am, I like to keep moving, and maybe the ideal form gets a little short shrift, as they say, but at least we keep moving forward. The question arises here, DK says, whether the cycle is susceptible to interference or whether it must not perforce run its appointed course. Can there be divine intervention? I would remind you that the law of cycles is the law governing the appearing and disappearing of great and active energies which pass in and out of manifestation, appearing, fulfilling the purposes of deity, and yet limited and handicapped by the quality of the forms upon which they make their impact. Now, basically, I've said it before, but all knowledge found on the third sublevel of the atmic plane contains this law of cycles. The law of cycles is part of all knowledge found upon the third level of the atmic plane. So we're a long way from possessing that, but the masters, characterized by the number five as they are, and the atmic plane being the fifth from below, and the third subplane of the atmic plane being the fifth from the lowest part of the atmic plane. We've got two fives there with the fifth initiation of mastership. They know something about all knowledge. And of course, it's an exaggeration. It can't be all solar systemic knowledge, all universal knowledge. It can't be that, but it certainly can be with respect to the globe in our Earth chain. Anyway, compared to what we at our stage of evolution can comprehend, the term all knowledge is not a terrible exaggeration. So, if any intervention is possible and takes place, it will be an intervention in time. Okay, so he's going to explain something interesting to us here. An intervention in time. Such an intervention is hinted at in the sacred scriptures, such as the New Testament, where it is foretold that for the sake of the elect, the time shall be shortened. Of course, this term, the elect, got John Calvin in a lot of trouble, such that the Tibetan eventually called Calvin's view of the Christian way as an abominable doctrine. Some thoroughly dismissive term that indicated how distorted was his view. It seems that he judged that the elect were chosen by God even before life began, and who was to be saved and who was not to be saved was, i.e., and sent to a fiery hell forever, was determined by God. This is pretty tough when you think about all merciful God. But okay, you know, the human mind, when tainted by selfishness and concreteness and an inability to grasp a synthetic point of view, has come up with many abominable doctrines. Anyway, it's going to be looked at differently. For the sake of the elect, the time should be shortened. By the elect, I suppose we mean the initiates and masters and higher beings who have attained along the initiatory ladder some greater degree of consciousness. The real meaning of this, which is not apparent in the rather inadequate translation which we have, and notice how he debunks the so-called inerrancy of the Bible. People are, you know, desperate to hang on to something which is true forever under all circumstances, and they try to find it in words which utterly infallible people have spoken. Well, the people who wrote or spoke those words are not infallible, and no word per se can contain the truth. It can only indicate the truth. So the real meaning is, because of the elect, or because of those who know and take right action, the progress of evil can be arrested. That's much more reasonable. The Tibetan has often pointed out the inadequacies of translation, as in the case of St. Paul, when he was talking about the third heaven as it veileth the seventh, and people had no idea what he was talking about, but I suppose he was talking about life on the various planes of the cosmic physical plane. So the time shall be shortened, and then we compare it with because of the elect, or because of those who know, maybe including disciples as well, and who can take right action, the progress of evil can be arrested. Not that it necessarily will be if they don't succeed. This is encouraging, and I commend the thought to your attention. There is a power which such elect can wield, understanding in its nature, preparatory and selfless. And of course, we would want to be part of that, would we not, to help humanity in this respect, that this time of duress through which we have been living in the 20th century, and it looks like the 21st century contains much of this as well, that this period of duress can be rightly shortened. And death, that light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one, because we are dealing here with with the second great invocation and the different portions of it that I suppose we can call stanzas. Sometimes the entire invocation itself is called a stanza. And death, to what does this refer? Not to the death of the body or form, for that is relatively unimportant. Notice his perspective. But to the power to relinquish, which becomes in time the characteristic of the pledged disciple. Not immediately. We make our pledge and maybe don't know entirely what we're getting into, and then we discover along the way that sacrifice, relinquishment are required and are in fact modes of increasing the depth and sensitivity of our consciousness and our capabilities in the world. So the power to relinquish, that light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. How important it is then to read this. I mean, to a certain extent, you can see how the eradication of the dark forces, their death or their disappearance from the physical plane, at least the disappearance of their representatives would be important. But when it comes to this as it applies to all of humanity, then we have the whole issue of acquiring a spiritual sense of values, acting upon it, letting go of those desires which are obstructive, and learning how to let go and embrace ever higher spiritual values. The new era is coming, the new ideals, the new civilization, the new modes of life, of education, of religious presentation, and of government are slowly precipitating, and naught can stop them. And this, of course, is encouraging, and you already see a lot of the young people, even in the in government, and supporting changes in government, who somehow realize this, and they are more representatives of the new. You know, they are reincarnated aspects of themselves earlier, and now they have a chance to act on that which is new and better. Master Moria is pretty well telling us that the future is always better than the past, or the next step ahead is always into something better than what we have left behind. And, you know, in a way for us, there is only the new. And he asks us to ride our horse fleetly over the bridge as if the bridge were burning behind us. So, you know, that first ray attitude can really speed things along the way. But, you know, the era is coming. Okay. And if we look at the world now compared to the time in which it was written, there have been maybe many improvements, and the lot of certain colonized people is better, and the lot of women is better, and the lot of children who are now employed in education-denying, debility-producing child labor will be dealt with, we're told, around the year 2035 by Russia and backed by the United States. All of that is most promising. And we can hope that, you know, that humanity has not delayed the onset of these dates that the Tibetan foresees. They can, however, be delayed by the reactionary types of people who are basically simply afraid, by the ultra-conservative and closed minds, who have no faith in the future, we might say, and those who cling with adamantine determination to their beloved theories, their dreams and visions, their interpretations and their peculiar and often narrow understanding of the presented ideals. So, delay. Somewhere he said, 300 years of delay. And elsewhere he seemed to imply it could be a lot worse than that. But let's just say reactionary and ultra-conservative. Nothing wrong with conservatism if it conserves values upon which one can really build a future, which is in line with the divine plan, because many good things have been established in the past, and it may be bad to release them and forget about them and pretend as if they never existed. There's always that danger when you want to build something that's so new, you forget the solidity and value of what has been established in the past. And sometimes Aquarius is guilty of that, or the people influenced strongly by Aquarius. So these things can be delayed. We don't want to be part of the delay. We don't want to be part of the obstruction. We want to be progressives in the spiritual sense of the word. So these people are the ones who can and do hold back the hour of liberation. And we see that we are surrounded by them all the time. And if I, in my day and era, if I'm to look at the teens of the political life in America, we see this interesting contrast between red and blue states. And although there's no perfection anywhere, we do see that there's a tendency to look backwards in the red states, and a tendency to be more progressive, maybe sometimes without the necessary anchor in true spiritual values in the blue states. This is my opinion, of course. We can only offer our opinion. I was looking at something called fact checking. It's really going on a lot in the United States and maybe in other places of the world, because there's so much lying going on. So very interesting that the fifth ray is emerging here as part of the expression of the Aquarian age. The motto here was, well, you're entitled to your own opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And alternative facts coming forth represent an insincere and devious mind. So hopefully certain values, because of the terrible challenge to them, are being re-emphasized and being understood by those who maybe had a superficial understanding of why these were sound, spiritual, intellectual values. A spiritual fluidity, a willingness to let all preconceived ideas and ideals go, as well as all beloved tendencies, the habit patterns, cultivated habits of thought, and every determined effort to make the world conform to a pattern which seems to the individual the best, because to him the most enticing, maybe because of his particular energy system tendencies. These must all be brought under the power of death. How important, then, that we're reading this about what the power of death really is, the power of relinquishment. And we might not, in the middle of a terrible shooting war, we might not think that that's what death meant. But he's clarifying the matter for us, and that's important. These must all be brought under the power of death and sacrifice, relinquishment, one must give up one's attraction to them, even though they are near and dear, held near and dear, pressed close to us. They can be relinquished with safety and security and no fear of results if the motive of the life is a real and lasting love of humanity. Love true spiritual love, as the soul knows it, can ever be trusted with power and opportunity and will never betray the trust. It will bring all things into line with the soul vision. So this whole idea of can we be trusted with can we be trusted with certain powers? Can we be trusted if we give up certain tendencies? Can there be trust that there will be coming in place of those tendencies something even better? There's probably always that moment when you give up something near and dear and you wonder, will it be replaced by something better? Or will you have foolishly given up something that is very important? I suppose many people going through sacrifice of some kind have that particular problem in their minds. If we love enough, okay, if the motive is a real and lasting love of humanity. So everybody really should test himself or herself on that point. Do I have a real and lasting love of humanity? Because there are so many things that, according to our structure, our rays and our astrological configurations and our experience, might put us off, might repel us on the personality level. In other words, we might not like what we see. We might dislike what we see. But can we go deeper and see in everyone something more real, which is akin to that more real thing within ourselves? Can we see the soul? And can we finally even see the spirit? We have to test ourselves on these fundamental questions. It's very important if we're going to have a real relationship with others and not just based on superficialities. Again, we have the energy of the three centers with which we are becoming familiar and can see them being brought together and their triumphant relation being fused and blended. You know, the triangles that I've been showing you of Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity, the relationship of the, in the past, the progressive relationship in the present, and the intended relationship in the future. I think you remember it well enough that I don't have to go back and dig it up. It thus becomes apparent that those who formulated this new and vital invocation long ago believed firmly in the power of humanity upon its own level of consciousness to express the three divine potencies, will, love, and activity in some measure. However long ago this was formulated, you know, the thought comes to me, it may be an erroneous thought, but I wonder if it was formulated for the earlier instance of the war, you know, the earlier instance of that, maybe, which was the war in Atlantis, you know, you kind of wonder about that. Or at least I do. DK is careful sometimes not to tell us when some of these ancient mantras were formulated. But he will tell us long ago, for instance, and we know something about now about the expanded history of humanity, that long ago really does mean long ago when compared with our fallible human estimations of the history of the human being. It's not that we all, you know, the normal historical approach has us all sort of living in caves and fighting saber-toothed tigers, when in fact great civilizations were expressing themselves with the great architecture and the arts and science and all the rest of it. So something is not correct, and I guess people like ourselves, we tend to trust the ageless wisdom. The average intellectual will say, what you're thinking about is nonsense. Trust the present findings of science. Okay, each to his own, and a choice must be made. The demand goes forth to the coming one to aid in the blending of the three upon earth, light, love, and power, right? Light, love, and activity. Activity, power, abstraction, whatever we want to, well, will, love, and the third aspect, whatever we want to call that third aspect. Sometimes you begin with will, sometimes with light, but that's the sequence. So come forth, O Mighty One, you know, and help with the blending of the three divine aspects upon the earth, and so bringing them into a physical plane expression, and thus unite the potencies of the human kingdom with the potencies which he, the rider, will bring with him for the saving of humanity. So, again, that's like uniting the third ray and the second ray, because the rider is principally a second ray being, however much at this time he may be reinforced by great beings on other rays, such as the Buddha on the third ray, the Spirit of Peace on the second ray with some first ray activity, and the Avatar of Synthesis definitely upon the first ray. Only when humanity offers all that it has to give to the service of the sad, the suffering, the oppressed, and will work actively and intelligently to bring about release, can that full cooperation be established between the inner and the outer potencies, which is so deplorably needed at this time. Well, you know, another version of to those who give all is given, and at the 11th hour, when all has been poured out that can be poured out, poured forth for the manifestation of the plan, then a kind of vacuum is created and a supplementation occurs, and the higher energies can emerge in greater flow, and the blending that we are talking about here can occur. Unless, for instance, those who can use this invocation parallel its voiced expression by some form of definite physical plane service, and so aid constructively the forces of light, their efforts will prove negligible. So, you know, it's interesting. He really wants this work upon the physical plane, definitely, and some places given only to meditation. You don't have to pay attention to this, but on the other hand, maybe such places sponsor events and lectures and provide literature and, you know, do things on the physical plane. So whether the balance is sufficient, you know, that has to be worked out in the conscience of those who are aiding the process. But anyway, he's certainly not asking us, he's not letting us rest easy with the formulation that our meditation is sufficient. The service aspect, although meditation can be a great service, the tangible service, given our state of development, is a must. And the great Lord in the Agni Yoga painting there, Christ in the desert, is it? Well, it is supposedly the picture of Christ in the desert, and it looks like he's using his own Maya Virupa and not the body of Jesus, which is interesting, because it's more of a blonde hair, you know, it's kind of interesting. He says by human hands and human feet. So maybe it's restful to meditate and think, well, other people have the human hands and human feet, but DK is assuring us that we will, if we have that attitude, we will make our service rather negligible. We will not have much impact. It is humanity alone which can precipitate the new incoming energies from the Lords of Liberation. They pass through the Christ, of course, the rider, but humanity precipitates these, and make possible their activity on Earth. It is humanity alone which can open the door on to the physical plane for the rider come forth from the secret place. And that's what we're doing. We're preparing men's minds and hearts for the reappearance of the Christ. That's one of our first and greatest duty, is to prepare men's minds and hearts for the reappearance of the Christ. The stupendous inner potencies can reach certain levels of human activity and contact, such as the mental plane, but their further progress downward into outer expression, power, and manifestation is dependent upon the potent magnetic indrawing power of man himself. So humanity is responsible for the manifestation of the great potencies. On levels lower than the mental. Yeah. Well, you know, these are chastening words and remind us how we must, in service, offer all we have. At least begin by offering more than is comfortable, and then eventually move to all we have. To those who give all is given. The thought lying behind the words, construct a great defending wall, might simply be expressed in the words, thus far and no further. And I quote, you know, I kind of referred to Gandalf when he was confronting the Balrog, that demon from the lower depths, kind of a horrible fire demon, that all from whom all the orcs ran in fear. It's amazing the imagination of some of the great film producers and directors, how they tap into these eternal truths which are operative on the subtle plane. As a matter of fact, when I think about Middle Earth altogether, I think about the astral plane, and I wonder whether any of these things really took place on the face of the Earth at all, or whether they were all more within the executable fantasy or executable fantasy of the astral plane. Middle Earth, you know, between mind and between utter tangibility. The thought lying behind the words, construct a great defending wall, might simply be expressed in the words, thus far and no further. And thus Gandalf stopped the advance of the Balrog, even though it meant a tremendous battle for himself, but a battle which was liberating for him, you know. And, you know, he became from Gandalf the Grey to Gandalf the White as a result of that battle. Of course, it's a story, but it's a story of each one of us. And as we are willing to engage in the right manner, combatively and effectively with the evil within us, we who are before the fourth initiation still unconscious black magicians, as Blavatsky tells us in A Way to Wake Us Up, will become the true white magician. We will turn from the gray to the white. The limit of effectiveness of the evil expression and of the power of the aggressors has been reached if the disciples and the men of goodwill actually now play their proper part. They have advanced to the point, apparently, where they could be stopped. Now, they were not stopped at that point. That's the interesting thing. Although, you know, their tremendous aggression in Operation Barbarossa, you know, along a 3,000-mile front into Russia and bordering states, offered the Black Lodge a great opportunity to really expand their grip. But the elemental nature, who knows manipulated how, of the Russian winter took its toll. And the next year continued to take its toll, and then Stalingrad finished off the hope of further advancement, and Moscow was never taken. And then the Soviets, with a huge number of men and a general who was relentless, Zhukov, I think it was, led a counteroffensive that captured the entire German army in that area. Was it the Sixth Army? Something like that. And basically made the end of the war inevitable before the advancing Russian troops. It took still 2 years, from the beginning of 1943 till April, March, April, May of 1945, but the inevitability was there, just as after the D-Day landing on June 6, 1946, although there 1944, although there were setbacks, the end was inevitable. So the aggression of evil, as DK foresaw it here, could have been stopped. And did men of goodwill actually play their part? Maybe increasingly. And maybe over the next 2 years from this time, 2.5 years, the expansion of the German forces was considered to be ineffective. They just got stuck in the mud. And just the way Russia defeated Napoleon, or should we say the elements, played a big role there. Have you ever listened to the 1812 Overture and seen, heard the Marseillaise, you know, the great rallying song of the French Revolution, being played against some of the beautiful Russian church music, as if there was a contest between these two great themes in Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture, filled with cannon shots, and used to be one of my favorite pieces when I was somehow about 3 or 4 years old. Just loved that piece. And the conflict between the two themes. The thing about the Marseillaise, of course, is that Napoleon was not advancing in the spirit of the French Revolution at all. He had become an emperor, a dictator, and maybe it is true that he was a later incarnation of Alexander the Great, maybe. Anyway, a lesson was taught. So the men and women of goodwill could at that time play their part in stopping the effectiveness of the representatives of the forces of materialism. This is DK talking in the present time. At that time, symbolically, they can put up an impregnable wall of spiritual light, which will utterly confound the enemy of humanity. Interesting. It will be a wall of energy. This is what the hierarchy does, of course. Vibrating, protective, and at the same time of such power that it can repulse those who seek to pass in their pursuit of evil and wicked objectives. I speak in symbols, but my meaning is clear. Now, to what extent was this done? I know it was done, you know, eventually. And let's just say for sure, the forces of the Allies had the planetary logos on its side, because their forces could align with the divine plan and the vision of the Axis powers was of a materialistic retrogression. So that was not going to be endorsed by the higher spiritual powers. I know this is in the nature of a review, and you say, well, look, the Second World War was fought a long time ago. But I don't think really that we're yet outside what I might call the Great War. It is a war between the dweller and the angel of humanity, and the second phase may have been called the Armageddon. The third phase may be more under control and psychologically and intellectually fought, but the possible eruption of the third phase, at least as I see it, the third phase of this war, should it erupt onto the outer planes, in any global sense, carries the possibility of the destruction of humanity through weaponry and, well, largely through the advanced weaponry. But it did not, in those days, go so far. Yes, toward the end of the war, there was the dropping of the atomic bombs, a horrific experience for those who were in the midst of it, and a complete liberation from the psychological snares of perceived materiality. Materialism was struck its death blow for all to see at that moment. DK writes about this, and we'll probably take that up. You know, it's got to be a tremendously controversial issue, because from the humanitarian perspective and as regards the form of the human being, it was horrific. And as regards the eventual perception of the realities of life, it was liberating. So maybe sometimes it's true what Master M says, the worse the better. One point you need to grasp more clearly, and it is both an encouragement and a point difficult of belief. If the sons of men who are cooperating with the forces of light at this time stand with steadfastness, and if the massed intent of the men of goodwill is brought down from the mental plane where most goodwill, desire, prayer, and invocation becomes frozen, and is carried away from its easy focus in the wish life of the aspirant, goodwill becomes active in expression and intangible deed upon the physical plane, so that the work done through the means of invocation and prayer, plus the needed fighting for the right, is done by those who can truly coordinate and integrate on all the three levels, and thus function as a whole. I've missed some kind of verb in there, but let's see if I can find it, because it didn't make something missing from the conclusion of the sentence. If the sons of men who are cooperating with the forces of light at this time stand with steadfastness, and if the massed intent of the men of goodwill is brought down from the mental plane, where it is frozen, and is carried away from its easy focus on the wish life of the aspirant, goodwill becomes active in expression and intangible deed upon the physical plane, so that the work done through the means of invocation and prayer, plus the needed fighting for the right, is done by those who can truly coordinate and integrate on all three levels and thus function as a whole. So basically, you know, it may not even be a complete sentence, but we have to grasp a difficult point. If all these things are done, this will mean, it's almost like this big sentence sets up a conclusion, this will mean the finish of the dominance of matter for all time. Wow. Well, you know, what about Judgment Day, of course? And what about the banishing of two-fifths of humanity from the Earth to other areas of education? And eventually, I think, to Mars. What about that? Anyway, I think we get the idea. I've read it through twice. I've not succeeded in getting the sense of a complete sentence. Maybe I'm just, you know, too tired or something. I don't know. But we get the idea. These things have to be accomplished. Not only invocation and prayer, but the needed fighting for the right. And it's got to be done by those who can truly coordinate and integrate on all three levels and function as a whole, meaning will, love, and activity or intelligence. If all these things are done, this will mean the finish of the dominance of matter for all time. Well, this still has not happened. There is still the battle of the materialists against the intended progress into the new age. So always the ideal is set, and we accomplish it to a certain degree, and maybe not much farther. Such a desirable condition may come very slowly from the standpoint of man's myopic vision, and may not even become apparent in its full significance to you in this life. Nevertheless, the victory will have been gained. So I think we get the idea of what we have to do, what is the great possibility, and even though it may take longer than we think, it will be leading to a victory. And our own myopia, which is conditioned by how long a personality lives and does not have the sweep of history as part of its consideration, this blinds us to the fact that really a victory is in process of being gained. Now, maybe that's why when the atomic bomb was released and everybody was exalted and horrified, DK took the line that this was a huge blow against the dominance of materialism. Matter and materialistic interests will no longer rule the coming generation as they have ruled the last two. Well, maybe we're looking at something from the late 90s of 1800s to the time when this is written. When the forces of aggression, of greed and cruelty are driven back, you know, as we say, onto the astral plane, and then later, farther back yet, it will mean the conquest of selfish desire by unselfish love and sacrifice. So he certainly sounds the ideal and what we might be able to attain. We still have this to do. We still have materialists in position of power, and sometimes extreme materialists. So we're teetering here, and the temptation is to move backwards towards that which we mistakenly judge as having been secure and more stable. This is the reward of those with whom we work, if reward is desired, and the idea is we do not seek reward. We seek the manifestation of the plan, divine plan. That is our reward. We seek nothing for the little personal self. That's the ideal. This achieved situation will then bring into closer relation humanity and the spiritual hierarchy. They will be en rapport in a manner new in history. Well, they will walk together upon the outer plane. That is predicted regarding some of the externalizing masters and those in humanity who can recognize them. The defeat of the oppressing nations and the liberation of the oppressed will be only the outer and visible sign of an inner and spiritual event one for which all enlightened people are working. It will, after a period of adjustment, which will necessarily bring its own peculiar difficulties, and we should be in that period of adjustment, usher in the new world with all that is entailed in that phrase. So he certainly is orienting our consciousness towards the possibilities, the new and better possibilities. If we can integrate within ourselves the will, the love, the intelligence, and death, the power to relinquish that which is of lesser values, and if we can construct this great defending spiritual wall because of our thought and our action, then all of this that is promised, as he sometimes calls it elsewhere, the wonder of the new age, all of this will materialize. But we are, you know, as a race, rather short-sighted, and we need some kind of hierarchical optometrist here, or optician, to help us see ahead when we tend to be totally captivated and appalled by the destruction of the forms, which essentially have to go anyway. I have placed before you, he says, the possibility. I would reiterate, as I have in the past, that it is humanity that determines its own fate. And sometimes, you know, we hope that mommy and daddy will save us from the effects of our actions, but I guess they do to a certain extent, but we have to learn how to stand on our own. Men have transcended the child stage and are now adults, though not mature. Now that's such a, you know, he sometimes talks about certain countries having an adolescent attitude. They're not children, but they're not mature, and sometimes he talks about, especially the United States in this respect. Maturity is achieved through self-engendered experience and decision, and for some time, we who seek to guide have confined our efforts to reaching the intelligent people, impressing the spiritually minded, and in stimulating humanity to right action without encroaching upon man's growing expression of free will. So, you know, as I said, when you're running, I had that experience, you know, running along with my son, and he's finally getting the sense of what it's like to ride on two wheels instead of having dad hang on so he doesn't fall, and I just let go and he kept going. So it was a teachable moment, you know, or a teaching moment anyway, I think, for both of us. Of course, getting off a moving bicycle is another matter. I can't remember how it ended. Okay. So the outcome is unpredictable, though we may see a certain measure of inevitability in future happenings. But man is free to choose the way that he shall go, and much of the responsibility for this, his choices, rests upon the shoulders of the more instructed of the human family and upon those who have achieved some measure of vision, disciples. Okay, so somehow we who would be disciples have a burden upon our shoulders. We must instruct. We have been instructed. We have chosen to accept instruction. And there are probably many who, when we encounter them with the kind of instruction that we have been given, will respond. That is the hope, and there's a great second-ray spiritual propaganda effort, the propagation of good ideas and of ideas that lead to reality and not to illusion and glamour. Much of that is going on now, and even more so after the war. There was a huge burst of the expansion of consciousness in movements, which I think correlated with the taking on in 1966 by the Christ of the vestures of the Buddha. I think that's a a deeply occult reason for the kind of consciousness movement that we had from the late 60s through the 70s through part of the 80s. And maybe it's died down a bit, you know, but those who could expand the consciousness and appreciate the possibility as well, that was their greatest moment of expression, and certainly it has done something of value, although not all, not by any means, because the old reactionary and ultra-conservative forces were simply waiting to coalesce, recoalesce, and again emphasize the material aspect. And still, and now, the possibility of expanded consciousness fights against the age-old clutching of that which is material and unreal, and so many millions don't see farther than the materialistic life. So we know that there have been certain landmark events in the history of humanity when matter is converted instantaneously into light and heat, then what is matter after all? So the attack against materialism has been well and truly anchored, and continues, and more when the etheric body is discovered and its reality is popularized, and so more can see the science that led to its discovery, then even further work against the materialistic thought form will have been accomplished. There's all kinds of ways in which there will be a falling apart of the materialistic perception, because after all, it is a state of perception whereby the unreal is perceived to be real, and that has to go and is going. But there's a battle on for those people who just can't get out of their materialistic thought. And for them, it's quite fine, because they are the reactionaries and the ultra-conservatives, as DK has said. And although it's not fine in the light of the divine plan, for them, it's adequate, and that's what they want. So the desire nature has to be elevated towards the less material and the more ethereal. And certainly in the age of Aquarius, which is the age of the acknowledgement of the presence of subtle energies, this will be accomplished. Again, though, the time equation is in the hand of humanity. With these thoughts upon the new invocation, I would leave you to work out these ideas in the recesses of your reflective consciousness. He certainly, you know, he says, don't go by with one reading. And even though we discussed this a little bit, I'm saying the same. Obviously, we're going quickly over these thoughts, and some ideas are being suggested. But it's up to you in the recesses of your reflective consciousness. That's where further light will really be added. I would ask you to use the invocation frequently with dynamic intent and true understanding, and thus cooperate by its use, by your love of humanity, and by your activity on the side of the forces of light, with those on the outer and inner planes who are seeking to drive aggression back to the place from whence it came, and to end the rule of hate and fear. Can it still be used today? Absolutely. Because subtly and unknown to the great majority of human beings, these forces have again come through the door that was left ajar, and they are again in a subtle way attacking humanity. So we have gotten to page 282, and since we're coming to a place where the subject is really changing, I'm going to say, well, that's it for this program, which is just about an hour in length. Because I don't think there's any point in getting into this new very interesting section about the avatars. It needs a fresh impulse. So this was the end then of number 28, and it's 1 hour, just about 1 hour. And we go from 278 to 282. And the day is the 23rd of February. We're well into Pisces, and the moon is coming up on Scorpio soon. I always am wary when the moon moves into that position, because I know that something will be revealed that is unexpected and may be difficult to deal with. So here we go, 278.2. And then the next one is program 29. Remember, there's a lot more than 29 programs here, or 29 hours, because some of those programs are 5, 4, and 3 hours long, and only a few of them are 1 hour long. Most are much longer. Okay, so 282 is plenty for you to listen to, plenty for you to study, plenty to take into the recesses of your consciousness and think about in a deep way. That's the value of it. And I think you can see that even though this targets a time of life 80 years ago, that the principles involved still hold, and that if it is true, as I suspect it's true, that we're in the third and decisive phase of the Great War, that what DK is saying here is of great value, helping us be effective in fighting on the side of the forces of light within this third phase of the battle between the dweller and the angel of humanity. So, okay, everybody. See you soon. Many blessings. Lots of love. Study hard. Meditate and apply. And, of course, I'll try to take my own good advice, right? Okay. Bye.